Obsession with the high trombones. Ted's pride in his trombone section can only have been swelled by the arrival in 1952 of one of the greatest of modern players, the impeccable Don Lusher, at the time with Geraldo's band. Don didn't accept the Heath offer straight away.
I was actually on fourth trombone in Jerry's band, but we did used to share the parts, so I used to get a fair crack of the whip. But I said, I'll think about it. And that went on, and it was very strange, because I should have leapt at the job, and I didn't. And then he called me up, or his secretary called me first, and said, Ted wants to speak to you. And he was quite vicious and said, listen, don't mess me around. If you want the job, it's yours.
End of argument. Don joined and was proudly featured. In fact, a Don Lusher showcase was the occasion of one of Ted's most catastrophic announcements. We heard the beginning of it just now. It carried on like this.
Stationed in Iama, Turkey. Mervyn and Ivor Haynes. It's signal to Catterick. Eddie Hawkins of 85 High Street, Cosham. Corporal Farmer, King's African Rifles, Nairobi. Hazel Allen of 39 Simon Road, Hollywood, Birmingham. And it's Don Lusher playing The Senor Swings.
Heath's hold on the discipline of his band had tightened over the years since some of the rebellious characters had left.
All I can tell you is that if we on the stand or anywhere said, if he gave a number out and somebody said, Ted, let's play so-and-so, my band, no one dictates to me now, not like the old days, and that's all you knew about it.
Don Lusher. Sometimes, though, talented players did try Ted's patience once too often.
Danny Moss was fired on the stand at the Palladium. He kept coming late. And says, if you come late next again, you're gone. When he'd come in late, Ted just idled over to him, smilingly said, you're fired. And he was fired, just like that.
Dennis Lotis. In fact, Danny had not been just lingering, but worse, as Duncan Campbell and his fellow trumpeters confirm, lingering in a pub.
It was called The Grapes.
The Grapes, yeah.
Yes.
So we're off in a pub opposite the stage at the Palladium, and he always had a guest band on.
Yeah.
That was, I think it might have been you.
And it was a blue, and they had blue uniforms, very similar, and Danny Moss was standing there with his pipe and his pint, sipping away, and he just glanced and he could still see a blue uniform. Yeah, right. We were on the stand.
I was talking to him.
Signature tune. Danny's not there.
Yeah.
Comes on.
He looks around.
Yeah. Anyway, looks around. Danny's not there. And he rushes on after the first number. Ted shuffles up after it and says, "You're fired, mate."
Yeah,
but he could say it with a smile.
With a smile,
Danny.
He could actually say it with a smile. Yeah.
If there was one licensed eccentric in the band, it had to be the bass player, Johnny Hawksworth.
And this is where we come to the unnatural break. Folks, do you get up in the morning feeling drowsy?
Do you get up in the morning feeling as though a good night's sleep would do you the world of good? Do you get up in the morning? Do you get up in the morning? Yes, what you need, what everybody needs is breakfast.
Yes, try the new Hawksworth idea on modern living. A new conception where food is concerned. Eat breakfast.
Yes, have breakfast with your dinner.
Breakfast with your tea.
Breakfast with your supper.
And remember, folks, breakfast comes in 27 handy sizes.
Very tiny. Tiny. Small. Quite small. Not too big. A bit bigger. Bigger than that. Just enough for you. Just enough for you and your friends. Just enough for you and your friend's dog. Tremendous. Enormous. Gigantic.
Yes.
Absolutely fantastic. Very large. Extremely large. Very large.
Yes, let breakfast get you on your toes like a ballet dancer.
Ted himself getting drawn into Hawksworth's one-man goon show.
People say to me, how did you get on with Johnny Hawksworth? Do you remember Johnny Hawksworth?
His rhythm partner, drummer Ronnie Verrill.
Everybody says, oh, I remember at the Palladium, not yet Verrill, and all these little quotes, you know, when I played the drums, he hadn't finished his bass solo yet. Not yet Verrill. Oh, all this. You must have had a ball with him. I tell you what, I didn't really. I didn't really. He was... John, bless his heart, but he was a bit of an egomaniac.
The fabulous Hawksworth, who has a few words to say.
I took my bass to a party, but nobody asked me to play. They said, for the bass, this is not the right place. Please take that large weapon away. So I took the first train to Jean, where I filled the bass full of ice cream, as well as two kippers, a dozen Dave Pippers, and some records of Julian Bream. Now, I could go on with my story, since Ted has already told his on This Is Your Life, complete with his wife. Blimey, I'd better get back to the biz, space.
Enough of that, John. Where do you think you are, on the third programme or something?
In spite of whatever underlying incompatibility there was between them, Verrill and Hawksworth were a great success on stage, here at the 100th London Palladium Sunday Concert.
Unspoken words and all that. Go on, what's the matter?
Carry on.
Look, I can tell from your face you're insulted, old boy. Just tell me what's wrong and let's sort it out carefully. Look, Beryl, we'll do a prearranged number of bars each, if that works. How many bars do you suggest? 2 bars, 3 bars, or 5 bars?
4 bars.
I never thought of that. It's a good idea. A good idea, Beryl.
You start.
Yes, I'll start. Ready? Reply to my friend, an impression upon the double bass of a test pilot going into a dive. Joe sent me.
That track, believe it or not, is billed as How High the Moon, though the tune was suspended for the comic turn. Ted Heath's band, in fact, was no stranger to comedy in general. They even made a record at one stage with that veteran variety turn, Tessie O'Shea. Ronnie Hughes was on the date.
I'll never forget it as long as I live. We walked into Decca and there's this big, fat, I mean, a real typical pro-variety, two-ton Tessie. And the whole session, she wasn't singing, she was dancing around, showing her bloomers. She'd lift her skirt, she had these big bloomers, and we were in hysterics. Do you remember that, Stan?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She was, I mean, unbelievable. Yeah. Remember, Ted Heath and Tessie O'Shea, you know. Yeah.
Time job making love to you. I'd do anything you want me to. But if you have no plans to use a full-time gal, a part-time job will do. I want a full-time job being close to you, making all your dreams come true. But if your heart don't throb about a full-time job, a part-time job will do. You wouldn't have to pay me a nickel or a dime, as long as you would let me get in a little bit of overtime. I'm on a full-time job, holding hands with you. I think you'd kind of like it too. Don't need a part-time job, I want a full-time job, but a part-time job will do.
But in between hilarities, the band was completely serious about its music and ambitious, like its leader, to prove itself in the homeland of the swing orchestra, the United States. The chance came in 1956, when musicians' union rules relaxed enough to permit an exchange of bands, Ted Heath and Stan Kenton making the reciprocal transatlantic journey. Ted and his men crossed on the Queen Mary, rehearsed for 3 days in New York, and then set off for Texas to share a stage show with June Christie, the Four Freshmen, and, unforgettably, Nat King Cole. This was the tour where Nat was physically attacked by white racists on stage in Birmingham, Alabama. Trumpeters Duncan Campbell, Eddie Blair and Bert Ezard were there.
The rule apparently there was that you must not have a coloured person working with a white orchestra, a white band. And so they overcame this by having a net down in front of the band, and Nat King Cole was in front of the net so that you could just see him and hear the music, and you weren't aware of what sort of a band it was. So we did all the concert until his part of it, and he came on after the interval and he did two or three numbers, and everything seemed to be going perfectly, and some bright spark round the back said, oh, it'll be all right, and he raised this net curtain. So then you've got Nat King Cole in front of a white band. And that went on for about 30 seconds, and then somebody leapt out of the audience and punched Nat Cole, knocked him straight backwards through a drum kit.
No sooner we started, Nat King Cole's out on the piano. Guy jumps up and smashes him off the piano. And the guys, the two guys with guns, Seth...
In the audience.
And then they said to us, well, quick, get in the band room, don't come out. And then we came out and says, right, get in the bus and lie low in the bus. Because they found guys...
They found a car or a van in the car park, stashed up with guns and ammunition. But somebody had given the police a tip-off because the police were in the auditorium waiting for this thing to happen.
Yeah. And frightening, that was.
And he got Nat and they whipped him out sideways in the backstage and out of the building altogether and gone. And we didn't see him for about 2-3 days afterwards. They got him well out of the state.
But Nat King Cole used to take... Remember that dinner he took us out to the
Greek
restaurant?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And we got all gold lighters with our names on them. Mm. Thank you, Nat King.
The climax of the whole tour was a concert for the band only at the revered Carnegie Hall.
And, of course... There was all the stars out front. I think Tommy Dorsey was there, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Like Tommy Dorsey, Benny Goodman and all that. Can you imagine that? Packed audience. And Ted being a non-drinker. Yes. He didn't mind if you drink, as long as you do your job well. Being a non-drinker, I never thought this would happen. He said, listen, guys, I'd like if you don't go out to the pub. And he put a bottle of whiskey or a couple of bottles of whiskey down on the table. And, of course, the pub drinkers, and especially trumpets, come on, let's get out to the pub. and we met some of the bassy band out there. It was marvellous. Anyway, we come back, and who do we see drinking? The non-drinkers are drinking the whiskey.
For once, I got nervous.
Ronnie Verrill.
On the whole tour, I was, you know, wonderful. Everybody was enjoying the band. And I got nervous. And I didn't drink in those days. I did not drink. I don't drink a lot now, don't get me wrong. But I didn't drink at all in those days. But I was so nervous, I said to Bobby Pratt, who was always good for a scotch, or two, or three. Bless his heart. And I said, Bob, can I have a little slug of your scotch, please? My hands were actually perspiring with fear. How about that? So he gave it to me. I said, one more. But I still, it still didn't take any effect, and I had to go on. The first number was King's Cross Climax, which starts off with a rapid drum intro, like an express train. Well, when your hands sweat, I'm going to slip out, right? Like they were greasy, buttery, you know? So I had to hold, clench them. And when you clench sticks, your technique goes a bit. But I did it with my arms. I did get through it.